Hello everyone, welcome to Teen Connect on WDIY 88.1. I'm your host, Yashvi, and handling our audio editing is James Ziprill. Here on Teen Connect, our primary goal is to engage in conversations with young people in our community to share their perspectives and gain insights on how to impact the lives around us. Tonight, we have a special guest joining us, James Gill. James is a high school senior with a strong passion for coding and has even gained hands-on experience in the field. I've had the pleasure of knowing James through school, and I've always admired his dedication to technology and problem solving. As Steve Jobs once said, everybody should learn to program a computer because it teaches you how to think. James truly embodies this mindset, using his skills to problem solve and innovate. Welcome, James. How are you doing tonight?
Good.
So can you tell us a bit about yourself? What got you into coding at such a young age?
So I think it started not really with coding, but when I was really young, we had this thing called snap circuits, right? And they were sort of these little pieces, and they had, like, snap buttons. And I remember there was always, like, a manual, and you were sort of supposed to create certain circuits to teach you certain things. And I know I always or almost never followed the instructions and tried to create my own thing. And that was probably my first introduction to the sort of, yeah.
What was your first coding project you ever worked on? And did it spark your passion for programming or anything else in technology?
I can't really say this is a coding project, but really the first thing I worked on, I remember, is there was an old computer in my grandparents' basement, like with an old CRT monitor, and you know, it took like 5 minutes to turn on or something. But I remember there was a game I wanted to play, but in order to do that, had to fix the computer first and like find all of the stuff that was lost over the years and get it working.
So what has been your favorite project so far and why?
It's hard to name like a certain specific project. I've started a lot of projects, and sort of I like the problem solving aspect of it, solving a really difficult problem. I'm not sure that I've maybe seen them all through to completion, because to a certain extent they're at this stage just learning experiences, right? I'm trying to solve the problem to learn more about how that works. I think I've definitely had some very interesting projects related to Apple's ecosystem and seeing how their operating systems and technologies work under the hood, and that's definitely been some of my favorite stuff to work on and some of my favorite people I've met through that.
Awesome. So can you tell us a little bit more about your project PyPush? What inspired you to start working on this project?
Yeah. So about a year before I started that project, I was working on a closely related project. I was helping to create an app that allowed you to install third-party applications on an iPhone. And through that, it introduced me to reverse engineering some of these mechanisms that are under the hood in Apple's operating systems, right? And through that, I started to notice that a lot of it was dependent on a push notification system. Now, I think most people have experienced push notifications, right? When they pop up on your phone, they're pretty much instantaneous from an app or an email or text. And so I started looking into Apple's push notification system, and that really is what PyPush started out as, right? I contacted some people I had discovered through other projects, and they had also looked into this push notification system, but nobody was really quite sure how it worked altogether. They had bits and pieces that they had needed and figured out, and Apple tells you some bits about it, but it wasn't complete. And so I wanted to create this project to sort of bring that all together. And as I was doing that, I realized that iMessage is basically an encryption layer on top of push notifications. And so, well, I thought, wouldn't it be really cool if we could send iMessages over top of the push notifications? And, well, after lots of work, I did eventually get that working.
So for our listeners new to this topic, what exactly is reverse engineering and also an encryption layer?
Yeah, reverse engineering, I mean, is kind of in the name, right? You take engineering, which is sort of building something new, and you do it backwards, right? You take something that's already built and you try and figure out how it works. So you start with, say, Apple's push notification system, and you've got a bunch of tools that you can use that people have developed over the years, and they let you sort of watch what is happening really on a close level. Sort of what when it's talking to, say, Apple servers, or when it's displaying things on the screen, and you have to work out why they did it the way they did it and how you might be able to replicate exactly what their program is doing.
And so how did PyPush and the code within that help you start working with Beeper?
So for anybody who doesn't know, and that's probably most people, Beeper is a product that sort of aims to bring together a whole bunch of messaging protocols. It interoperates with, SMS and Instagram Messenger and Facebook Messenger and WhatsApp and all of these different messaging protocols so that you can have a single app that allows you to see all your messages and reply to them all in one place. Right? But the way they do that is kind of difficult because they're relying on mimicking the way all of these apps operate and talking to their servers. And so with Apple's, that was particularly difficult. And so the solution they had come up with for a while was they had a whole bunch of physical Mac devices, Apple's computers, in a data center. And they simply wrote a script that went and typed in the iMessages, like basically into the app running on the Macs. But this is obviously very expensive and very inefficient because you have to have a whole bunch of physical computers of a specific luxury, essentially, brand, right? Apple computers are somewhat more expensive than a normal server. And you have to have a whole bunch of them, one for every user. And that, so they needed a better solution than this. So that's where my project came in, right? Because I was able to send iMessages. And really, I thought of this just as a fun proof of concept. Hey, I can send a message and it shows up on my phone. And it means that I've done something useful with this project that I spent a whole bunch of time on. But when I started showing it around to people, they were like, well, there's this company, and they've been trying to do this, and they haven't been able to. Well, why don't you ask them? And so I did, and, well, obviously they were quite interested in replacing some of their Macs with this project.
So referencing the Wired article written about you, how did you feel when you sent the Discord message explaining that you had this code that would work for their company? Did you expect such an enthusiastic response?
I mean, I thought it was pretty cool, but I don't know that I had really seen the full picture of what it could do and how that they might want it.
So what's it like working for Beeper at such a young age, and what have you learned so far?
It's definitely quite interesting. There are some things which I feel confident in, and in such way, it's nice to be in to be working for a company where that there's some things I'm very confident in. And it's nice to be working for a company where my contributions, I can actually see them put into practice. Another way is it's a little bit stressful and a little bit intimidating because I'm working with people who have obviously had a lot more experience than I have in this field. And even though I might have a specific amount of knowledge in a certain area, there are other areas where I might not.
So for Beeper's mission of bridging the communication gaps between platforms like Android and iPhone, how do you feel about the blue bubble versus the green bubble debate? Do you feel like it's a technical issue or more of a social one to you?
There are two issues at play, and I really can't say much about the social side of the issue. Personally, I just text message people and I don't really care, but I can see how one is definitely, the user experience of iMessage is definitely a lot more pleasant, and that leads to certain benefits. From a technical level, I think that end-to-end encryption is definitely something that we should be desiring. And unfortunately, SMS and as of right now, even RCS are not completely end-to-end encrypted, meaning the carrier can read basically all of your text message. And so I think from a technical perspective, iMessage is very desirable in that way.
So what exactly makes the iPhone messages blue versus like an Android where they're green?
So basically, on an iPhone, the messaging app is doing two separate jobs, and they've just shoved it together into a single app to make your user experience nicer. On the one hand, it's sending SMS messages. I believe it stands for Simple Messaging Service or something. It's tied to your phone number. It's tied to the carrier. It's very simple. It's just sending a piece of text over the phone lines, essentially, right? The phone company deals with that. On the other hand, iMessage is an internet-based protocol. And so what happens there is it's sending packets to Apple's servers, which are end-to-end encrypted, and Apple servers relay them using push notifications, that's where that all ties in, to the target device. It doesn't rely on the carrier or phone number at all. You'll notice you can use iMessage with just an email address if you wanted to.
What advice would you give to young coders who want to start ambitious projects like PyPush?
Personally, I think that the important thing is to have sort of an engineering mindset, right? I think someone once described engineering to me as anyone can build a bridge that won't fall down, but an engineer is the one who tries to do it with the least amount of money and materials possible so that it won't fall down, but only just so, right? And I think that sort of really is an important idea, right? You want to have something that when you're trying to accomplish something, you want to see. Basically, what I've been trying to do is stretch the limits of what I can do with the limited resources I have for me. So software engineering, reverse engineering, it's all engineering, right? You're trying to stretch the limits of what you've been given in terms of the protocols you're allowed to use and the devices you have to accomplish your goal, right? And so it doesn't really work if you don't have that engineering mindset, that push to do as much as possible to explore all the options you have with the resources you have available.
So speaking of the resources you have available, are there any specific tools or practices that help you become a better coder and software engineer?
I think there are many ways to sort of approach coding and software engineering, right? And so there aren't any specific tools that are like you need to use them, right? I think when you're learning, I think there's sort of there's almost two phases, right, that I think everybody should approach it. And this is just an opinion. I don't know if this is maybe the way everybody needs to take, but you sort of have to come up with that the foundational layer. And that's where things like Scratch and code.org come in handy, right? You're trying to build up this sort of idea of coding as a principle, like instructing the computer on what to do. But after that, you sort of need to instead approach it from the opposite end. You need to, at some point, take a leap and explore technologies at a lower level and work your way back so that you understand what's going on. At some point, you need to take a leap to, say, a lower level language, and you need to sort of explore how you can accomplish basically what has already been accomplished, right? It's really, if you don't know how other things are done, you can't really imagine how you're going to do your own thing. So you need to take, at least in my opinion, the easiest approach is to take apart things that already exist and sort of try and replicate them, right? That's going to give you a very good understanding of why we've done things or why people have done things the way they are and how you might be able to expand upon that.
Well, thank you so much for engaging in such conversations so far. Well, you're listening to Teen Connect here on WDIY with our guest, James Gill. We're going to take a short break, but don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
WDIY has been broadcasting in the Lehigh Valley and beyond for 30 years, providing news.
These planes were hijacked.
The Bethlehem Steel Corporation will end its steelmaking production in Bethlehem.
We hope that you enjoyed hearing from the Dalai Lama.
Local public affairs.
As I say, it's a race of interest.
What we're experiencing today will later on be studied.
And music.
My name is Janice Ian.
Our guest, Lake Street Dive.
In a few minutes, we're going to be talking to Petey Yarrow from Peter, Paul, and Mary.
WDIY, since 1995.
Welcome back to Teen Connect. Tonight, we're talking all about software engineering with James. Are there any upcoming features or updates that you're excited about for Beeper?
Yeah, so we're re-releasing our apps with a new user experience. But the other thing we're trying to do is sort of a more technical change. Before, we hosted all of our, we called them bridges, right? And they were what interfaced with the different networks and what interfaced with our side and sort of did the translation between the chat networks. And before, we hosted them in the cloud. And that had certain privacy implications because we had to decrypt the messages that were end-to-end encrypted on the one side. In the cloud, we processed them to translate them between the protocols and then re-encrypted them to send it to the client. But obviously, you have to trust Beeper somewhat that we're not reading those messages in that brief period of time where they're decrypted. So our new clients are instead transitioning away from that to something we call local bridges, where we're running a piece of software inside the app itself that talks directly to the chat network, so the messages never leave your device.
Awesome. So you went to California for an interview on CBS. What was that experience like?
definitely quite interesting. I've never been to the West Coast before. Also, never been interviewed on TV before, so that was definitely an interesting experience. I think it was kind of a thing on a whim, right? We were releasing that new app, and originally I think we were going to interview somewhere in Philly. I'm not sure. But the reporter wasn't able to make it over to Philly, so with not very much notice, the company flew me out there, and we did an interview actually at the CEO's house. That's where they staged it. Yeah, and had some interesting discussions about the Beeper Mini back then.
So how is Beeper Mini different from Beeper?
So Beeper Mini was essentially sort of an experiment, right? It was a stripped-down version of our Beeper app, actually building... We were already in the works of this rewrite I mentioned before, this new user experience. So we weren't quite ready with it, but we decided that we would take this new user experience and take the new iMessage code and sort of shove them together into this mini version of the app. It only did iMessage, that was the one thing, but it did iMessage pretty well, right? But that was its one goal, right? It didn't do any of the other chat networks, and we were planning on eventually upgrading it with to bring the rest of the networks back into it.
So what's next for you in terms of projects or career aspirations?
Yeah, so right now I'm still working for Beeper, though they've been acquired by Automattic. I think my role has transitioned more into a general sort of software engineering role, which is definitely quite interesting because Beeper is no longer doing iMessage. Apple started making repeatedly technical changes to try and block them, and I think they got a little bit tired of the constant fighting with them. So I sort of transitioned into a more general role, and I think for the foreseeable future, I'll be working part-time there on that. In the upcoming fall, I plan to go to college. I haven't quite decided yet, but probably somewhere like CMU, Carnegie Mellon, or RIT. And after that, I'm not quite sure.
And if you can build or work on any technology, what would be and why?
I mean, any technology is a bit broad, right? Really, I'd be happy with, I am happy, right, with anything that sort of has an interesting challenge. I think I've mentioned this before, but over the past couple of years, I've done a whole bunch of really short projects that had some interesting problems, but maybe weren't super large, long-term projects, right? And I think that definitely is really fun for me, at least. I like exploring new things and sort of expanding the realm of things that I have knowledge about to be as wide as possible. So I don't know if there's really a specific thing that I want to, right now at least, work on, but just a whole bunch of little things.
On the topic of exploring new things, are you interested at all in artificial intelligence as it's becoming more widespread in our society?
Yeah, that's an interesting conversation. Right now, I think there's sort of a bubble, right, around AI. Pretty much anything, if you put AI in the name, it instantly gets funded. And so as with past technologies like that, I think it's going to die down a little bit. And I'm kind of waiting for that to see sort of the practical engineering type things that might come out of that. But right now, I'm sort of wait and see, right, what actually falls out and ends up being practical and what ends up just being.
And to follow up on our previous question, if you could meet anyone in the tech industry, alive or dead, who would be and what would you want to ask them?
Oh, that's a tricky question, I guess. I don't actually know that I want to meet someone specifically by name. I think I would be really interested to meet some of the engineers behind Apple's iMessage protocol and talk to them and discuss why they made some of the decisions they did, get some insight into that. But I don't know that I have any sort of celebrity or anybody by name that I'd really want to talk to. I don't know.
Interesting answer. And if you could go back and give your younger self advice about software engineering or life, what would it be?
I mean, in terms of giving myself advice, I think it's mainly just that In terms of giving myself advice, I think I would basically just go back and say, point out some of the more interesting things I had learned and say maybe I want to go explore them a little bit earlier and dig a little bit deeper into some of them. But at this point, I don't think there's anything really major. Obviously, I haven't had that much total life experience, so I don't know that I can really say anything sage.
So within the realm of software engineering, do you encounter a lot of debugging problems, or what does like your day-to-day work with this topic look like?
Yeah, the debugging is pretty much most of what I do, right? It's pretty much most of what anybody works on. Because, I mean, debugging really is just another name for problem solving, right? Often you'd consider a bug just to be a small problem, but instead of problem solving, right? That's basically the whole job. If it's not debugging, it's problem solving in the other form of creating something new. But honestly, that's a little bit rarer, right? It's exciting, but debugging is mostly what you do.
And in high school, what has been your favorite class so far?
I think I would have to say robotics. There was a class that was taught for First Tech Challenge. I don't know if anybody's heard of that already, but and eventually after completing that class, I started working on the club team that the school has, and right now I currently mentor said club team. They split it off into several groups by grade level, and I'm mentoring them through their control systems, they call it, which controls the robot, right, through software.
Has there been any interesting projects you've done within your school's robotics team?
Definitely some very interesting projects there. I think one of the more interesting things I did, I think this was last year, we were working on trying to figure out where the robot is on the field at all times. And there's sort of like QR code-like things on all the corners of the field. And so we actually installed 3 separate cameras on the robot and had it switch between them looking for these QR codes, and then a whole bunch of tricky like trigonometry and other math to try and figure out where the robot was based on these QR codes and how they were like stretched in the camera's view.
What programming languages or technologies did you start with?
Yeah, so I probably started with maybe a little bit less of an optimal route, but I remember I started with this sort of, I guess we could call it an ecosystem, right? A whole bunch of devices, they were called Arduinos, right? And you program them in a sort of subset of the C language, and you're running on a microcontroller, right? So it's not a full computer, and you're very close to the hardware, and you did things like toggling LEDs on and off. And I think that's a very flexible and powerful way to start, because you're starting right down there at the bare metal, right? There aren't a whole bunch of layers like the operating system and other applications to sort of manage things for you. You have to manage the hardware. You turn on the LED like directly. You have exclusive control over the entire device you're running it on. And I think that's definitely a fun way to start, if maybe a little bit more difficult right off the bat than it needed to be, cause some initial frustration.
So within learning these new languages and just software engineering as a whole, what has been the biggest challenge you've faced?
I think the biggest challenge I faced was probably that initial time I tried to look into Apple products, right? Because there's a whole mountain of stuff basically that Apple has developed over the years, and you're basically looking at it and like, how can I possibly understand how this works? But I mean, the way I resolved it is I found a whole bunch of people who had already been working on this problem and writing a little bit of it down. And also, I just sort of picked something in this small, a small thing in this mountain, and I sort of figured that out and saw what directions it took me, right? What pieces, this started out with app development and installing third-party applications. But that took me to Apple's account and login protocols and processes, right? Because you need to sign in with an account to like install the app. And so it sort of branches out, and that's how I sort of approach problems, right? I start with some small piece of it and I branch out as things are connected until I've built up the entire or a good portion of the tree of things, I guess, in my mind, right?
So speaking of branching out, Where do you see this current topic of messaging branching out for you in your future? Do you plan on doing something else or are focusing more on app development?
I don't know. At this point, really, I think there are interesting problems to be had in a whole bunch of different fields and different topics within software engineering, reverse engineering, information security, right? All sort of interrelated, and I can't really say which problem I'm gonna think is interesting next, because I don't really know yet. But I guess I'll see.
Where can our listeners keep up and stay updated on what you're doing?
Yeah, so I've got a blog at jjtech.dev, jjtech.dev, a little bit of a weird domain there. And on there, you can also find my Mastodon, which is like Twitter, but not Twitter, and GitHub pages, which probably I'm a little bit more active on than writing full blog posts.
Well, thank you so much, James, for sharing your experiences and insights with us tonight. It's been inspiring to hear about your journey within software engineering. We look forward to seeing all the incredible things you'll continue to achieve. And to our listeners, thank you for tuning in to Teen Connect on WDIY 88.1. Stay informed, stay empowered. Remember, your actions do make an impact. Until next time, I'm Yashvi. Have a great day.